we recommend starting at the, you know, teenage level, because once the kids are 12, 13, they're really ready for some of the powerful ideas. They're really natural born abstractionists. They love these ideas.
Welcome to Kids Lab, a podcast for parents, educators, and everybody interested in STEAM education. In this episode, we're talking to Jens Mönig. He's the co-founder and lead programmer of Snap, a free, visual, and educational programming language. Here are some interesting facts about Jens. He's not just the lead developer of Snap, but also a researcher at SAP and a lawyer. Quite an interesting combination. Together with Brian Harvey from the University of California in Berkeley, he developed this visual programming language. So Snap, again, it's a visual programming language. Typically, you'd now think this is a toy or childish programming language that is very limited in what you can do with it. But Snap is also used for serious introduction into programming. For example, it has been used to teach the beauty and joy of computing, an introductory course in computer science at the University of California in Berkeley. You will later also hear about Scratch, which is another block-based visual programming language that Snap has been inspired by. Just like Snap, it is used primarily by kids to create stories, games, and animations that can then be easily shared with the community. One of the key differences to Snap is, though, that Scratch is missing some of the advanced programming concepts, which is why many people advocate to start with Scratch or even Scratch Junior, which targets kids between 5 and 7 years, and later switch to Snap for the more advanced features. So coming back to Snap, the main site to get started is snap.berkeley.edu, which is where you find the web-based editor and also the forums as well as the published Snap projects of others. And of course, all these links and all the discussed projects will be in the show notes, and those are at kidslab.dev. Welcome to Jens Mönig, co-founder and lead developer of Snap. Hi, Jens.
Hi, Sven.
So, Jens, the history of Snap. I did some research. I know it started in California. You started with Brian Harvey, I think. And tell us the story. How did it happen? How did you meet? And how did you decide to create a new visual programming language?
Actually, Sven, it didn't start in California at all. It started here in my law firm in Germany. I was an attorney at the time, and as a side project, I was teaching law, or better, kind of legal aspects of surgery to surgical nurse students at the University Hospital in Tübingen, using a legal expert system I had developed some years earlier. And that was when I discovered the beta version of Scratch at MIT. And when I looked at Scratch, it just was the most beautiful app I'd ever seen. And I wanted to program something that looked like Scratch for my students, for my surgical nurse students. And I downloaded the beta version of Scratch, and it was programmed in Smalltalk, which I knew from my work earlier. And I was able to, raise an exception. And through that debugger, I was able to get into Scratch and look at the source code and actually change it. So I basically hacked it and then added a bunch of stuff that I'd like to add. And I didn't know at the time, because I'm a lawyer, not a programmer, I didn't know that MIT likes being hacked. So one night, somebody from MIT, I think it was Mitchell Resnick, called me and invited me to the very first Scratch conference in 2008. And they even kind of paid my airfare in my hotel. And I was there. I was like in heaven when they offered me a job to work on Scratch. And so that was kind of a dream come true. And it was at that first Scratch conference in 2008, on the last day, there was a session about kind of, things you can do now in Scratch and how they're cool. And there was this kind of crazy professor guy, Brian Harvey from UC Berkeley, who was also an old logo person, who was giving a session showing how you cannot do branching recursion in, or you couldn't do that in that version we had back then, and how you could not build your own block, how you couldn't do custom procedures. And so kind of Mitch said, you know, Jens, why don't you just kind of find some cool new features for Scratch? And I thought, you know, well, the obvious cool new feature to add to Scratch would be build your own blocks, which we kind of abbreviated to BYOB, you know, kind of as a joke. So that was actually my first project. And I did that using our Scratch source code. I made this kind of mock-up of how parameter passing could work, how you could define a block with a kind of a block prototype and a hat block, and then attach the expression, the statements underneath it. And then I actually got it to work. So I was able to do fractals and recursion. And we decided it was probably a bit too much to get into Scratch. And it was again at that time that we got an email from one of Brian's students who said, "Hey, you guys over at MIT, you don't know how to do a proper programming language. You need some help?" And then I think it was John Maloney, the lead programmer of Scratch, who wrote back, actually, why don't you have a look at what Jens did, this BYOB prototype? And that got me in touch with Brian and then with Dan Garcia. And they asked me whether they could use kind of my prototype for this new course they were developing, which was called The Beauty and Joy of Computing. And I'd already moved on doing other prototypes for Scratch and kind of was dragged back into this work of BYOB. And out of that really came this collaboration with Brian. So, you know, there were many things I didn't know about programming. I thought I was the best programmer in the world, but I really wasn't. I knew certain things, but since I'm not a programmer by training, just a lawyer, it was really Brian who taught me, you know, all of kind of Lambda and functional programming, because he wanted to have all these things in Snap. So our sessions usually were, you know, Brian tells me some crazy thing that I'd never heard that needs to be in this programming language. I said, it's not possible. I can't do this. And then I thought, wow, this is really cool. You know, what if it were possible? And so, yeah, that's how it really started. And then later, you know, they made that course, The Beauty and Joy of Computing. And then they got some more funding for it. And I essentially drifted over to UC Berkeley. And Brian and I have been working on this ever since.
Very cool. So it started in 2012, right?
In 2008, actually.
Oh, 8? Yep. Oh, my God. Wow. So before we dig deeper into Snap, could you explain to my mom how visual coding works?
Oh, sure. It's just like regular programming, except that for typing in words that together with other words and some funny characters form structures that we can then translate into something that the computer knows how to handle. We already kind of have these structures as graphical representations. Sometimes there are boxes and arrows, and you kind of drag the arrows and connect them to the other boxes to visualize data flow. In the case of so-called block-based languages, it's really the statements and expressions that you find in any programming language, except that they're kind of shaped like building blocks, maybe like little puzzle pieces, and you can stick them together really like Lego bricks to construct kind of towers of code. So it's really the same thing, except you don't have to type the words. Since you're not interested in the individual characters anyway, you're interested in the whole structure. Nobody needs, you know, an if. You need, you know, if something, then do something else. You need the whole thing. So just typing if doesn't mean anything. You want the whole thing. So basically in block-based visual programming languages, you're getting the complete structure already, and then you fill that with life.
Very cool. So it's, I think the UI is pretty much borrowed from Scratch, right? So you just mentioned it's all based on Scratch, but it's complete rewrites with several extensions. So what are these extensions that make Snap useful for a serious introduction into programming? And what is Scratch missing in this case?
That's right, Sven. It's what we lawyers actually call a slavish copy. It pretty much looks identical to how Scratch used to look when I was still working on it. And so at one point I rewrote the whole thing because back when I was working on Scratch, it was a standalone application. You had to download it, but we wanted to move it to the browser. And the Scratch team decided to do that in Flash and ActionScript. And I wanted to try JavaScript because that, to me, seemed like something that would be easier for me to do in the browser. And turned out it was a pretty good decision. So first of all, it's not that, and I really have to, this is really important. It's not that the Scratch team doesn't know how to add these things to Scratch. They're, the world-class designers and kind of the best of the best. They know how to do a proper programming language, but there's pedagogical reasons for leaving out certain features. And the reasons are they don't want to scare novices, like young kids, away, because they might see all these things that they don't know, and then they feel like, oh, I have to know all these things in order to participate. Now, Snap was made for the students at UC Berkeley. They're, 16, 17, 18 years olds, and we don't have to be so strict as to not to scare them away. So we want the same welcoming low floor, kind of the childish primary color user interface, but we also want to really teach the powerful concepts of computer science. And that's why we needed to add a couple of things. And the first thing we added was, custom procedures, functions that can return a value. So the idea is you can make, except for a very tiny subset of primitive blocks, you can make any block you see in Scratch, in Snap, even the control structures. So that's the second thing, that, having something as not just custom blocks, but also blocks as first-class citizens in the language means that we can go meta on the blocks. So we can build our own, for loop. That was, for a long time, was our flagship example. Another big thing is really all around this idea of first-classness. First-classness basically means that you can assign something to a variable or put it into a list. You can pass it into a function, and it can be the return value of a function. So many things in Snap are first-class that are important to the language. That's also lists. So we can have a list, and we can put a list inside a list, and that lets us create any data structure, which is something you can't do in Scratch. There's variables. Scratch has variables, and some of them are for all sprites, and some are for this sprite only. But they're basically all global. It's just kind of some are more global than others. Snap also has true local variables, script variables that are particular to a script. So also inside a block definition, you can have a variable that is safe and it cannot be part of a race condition of some other script. It's these kinds of things, so we can have a list of sprites, which is also another kind of first class idea. We have some very crazy ideas, like, ever heard of a continuation? That's a crazy idea from Scheme, really, that lets us build even some funky things like catch, throw, and non-local exit. Those are really kind of highfalutin CS ideas. So it's basically the real hardcore computer science stuff that we're trying to make accessible by expressing it in blocks.
So would you say if you understood Snap, you're pretty much ready for any other programming language?
Yes, that's totally the idea behind Snap. The idea behind Snap is to really offer almost a complete walkthrough through the powerful and grand ideas of computer science. So you'll miss many of the features in professional programming languages once you've seen them in Snap. Yep, absolutely.
Very cool. So I digged around on the website and I found the reference manual, and it's 124 pages long, which is probably an awesome reference if you really want to dig deep into it. But there must be an easier way to get into Snap, right? I mean, obviously, I can just go to the website snap.berkeley.edu and just do some trials. But are there some kind of video tutorials out there, or even a course or something like that?
You're absolutely right. The great place to start is go to the website, snap.berkeley.edu, and you can start coding right away. You can also search for projects that you might be interested in. You can look at the code. But there's also teaching material. Really the reason why I made Snap is for the Berkeley course called The Beauty and Joy of Computing. And so there's a website. It's linked to from the Snap website. It's called bjc.berkeley.edu. It's that course in Berkeley, but it's also the name of a course that's being held in hundreds of schools throughout the U.S. and Canada and other parts of the world. It's being translated to Dutch right now as we speak, and also to German. Beauty and Joy of Computing, that course is really, I think, the world-class course of computing. It's a life changer for many people. It's a rigorous semester-long course, basically a year-long course for high school. And it's all in Snap. It's a really solid, great introduction. Then there's a Microsoft adaptation of that course. Microsoft has a great CSR initiative called TEALS, and they also teach CS in many, many schools in the U.S. and in Canada, and they have their own adaptation. So if you look for the Microsoft TEALS curriculum, that's also in Snap, great material. And then, you know, there's courses that my colleague Jadka Hügle and I made at SAP, at OpenSAP. We made a little introductory MOOC. It's a two-week MOOC. You'll find it at OpenSAP. It's free. And, you know, even if it's not running, you can just enroll and download all the materials, all Creative Commons, all the videos, all the materials. Just use it. It's in English, German, and French. And it's kind of 12 projects in 2 weeks that start really, really very easy. It's got a variety of, you know, games and just creative projects. And then the second week, we're also kind of trying to push the envelope a little bit to show you what is possible by kind of going into cloning and recursion. And there's actually a bunch of other materials. If you look at our website, you'll find links to most of that.
Very cool. So I'll look around, and of course we'll put it into the show notes, and that's again at kidslab.dev. So you must have given so many workshops around Snap, and I'm pretty sure there's things you can do wrong and also hopefully do right. It also, I mean, makes fairly sense to me by now that you should do a workshop not as a one-off thing, but actually, you know, repeat it over a couple of weeks at least, because you want to get a solid introduction to programming, right? So what kind of tips and tricks do you have for us if, let's say, a teacher would like to start a workshop around Snap?
You're right. I love doing workshops, most of all, really for selfish reasons, because I want to see what works and what doesn't. And then I want to go back and change parts of Snap or parts of the things that I've been working on. And you know what? We've actually done a little MOOC on how to do a workshop. You'll also find it in OpenSAP. And it's not really a MOOC. It's not a course where you kind of take a test. It's basically a receptacle for the projects that we tried ourselves and that worked. And you know, in that MOOC, we also give some tips of kind of what you can do. And kind of the most important thing is, like, think about, is it a one time thing, or is it something that you're going to do repeatedly? If it's a one-time thing, don't overplan, and don't have it just be about coding. Also, one thing is, try to be inclusive. And you know, try to get a sense of who's going to come. Is it going to be kind of, what's the age group? We recommend not starting too early, and that might be controversial, but we recommend starting at the you know, teenage level, because once the kids are 12, 13, they're really ready for some of the powerful ideas. They're really natural born abstractionists. They love these ideas. That doesn't mean that, you know, younger kids can't do it, that they can do, but for SNAP, the optimal age group we think is teenagers. And then there's, you know, things like, you know, try to not let everybody do the same thing, like try to offer a bunch of different activities. So it's not just about robotics or not just about mathematics, but maybe also about, you know, making music or experimenting with video or, you know, with games, but also not just games. Maybe something could be more about, you know, art.
Yeah. I mean, this reminds me of a recent project that I saw, right? I think it was called Whistle Draw.
The Whistle Draw project, yeah.
Yeah, which is really nice, right? It uses the microphone as an input to kind of translate it into a color, and then you can kind of move the mouse pointer and draw on the screen. And then you can actually read it back, right? So you can read it and use loudspeakers to give it back the tone. So very nice.
Yeah, that was a really nice idea. We got that when we were planning museum night at the Staatsgalerie in Stuttgart. And we were kind of thinking about art and informatics, really. And one thing that we were thinking about is, you know, it's really about numbers. This whole digitalization is, you know, converting media, converting stuff to numbers, and then computers are good at crunching them. So once, you know, you look at the samples of something that you record with a microphone, it's just a bunch of numbers. So if it's really just a bunch of numbers, we can let them represent anything. And the idea was, why not let them represent color?
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very creative. So in the professional IT world right now, there's a trend that's called no code, low code. And it kind of means that instead of writing code in a text-based format, you snap together a couple of blocks like in Snap. And this is how you create a workflow or a program. So at the end, though, I mean, even though it's a trend, most computer programs are written in a text-based format right now. So at some point, the students will have to translate whatever I've done in Snap to a text-based format. Do you have an idea how that transitioning can be done in a perfect way, or is it necessary at all? What's your opinion on that?
That's a great question, Sven. And I think you already mentioned an important tidbit, which is that many activities in programming today aren't the, you know, one guy sitting in front of a text editor kind of writing it all up. But in many enterprise-level applications, it's kind of more a series of configurations that are often done in semi-graphical ways. Yes, of course, if you're kind of going down and you're writing something from nothing, you're going to fire up your editor and just type in the text. I'm not sure whether that is something that should be done in education, let alone in school, or whether that could come later, if at all. I mean, if you think about it, really, blocks-based computing at its heart is text-based computing. I mean, the blocks have text on them. I mean, I guess you could also draw icons on them, but you know, there's if and else written on them. That's the same if and else that you'll find in your professional programming language. So I think it maps very well. You get to learn to use these structures, and you're going to, you know, recognize them again when you see them in some other language. So in the BJC curriculum, the Beauty and Joy of Computing, we have one unit that is called Besides Blocks, and that in which we're comparing the blocks from Snap to their counterpart in Python. And we're finding that it works really very well, the transition. Like, you don't really have to translate the blocks to some other language. But you're just going to recognize these things in another language. But here's one word of caution. So I think it is okay to do that change when you have a lot of time with the students. Like when you're only seeing them like for 2 hours a week, I'd rather introduce them to powerful ideas than to the idea of syntax. And even then, you know, maybe learning a different programming language with different powerful ideas might be even better than just learning a different syntax. So I think the powerful ideas are really, you know, abstraction, data, algorithms, recursion, the internet, you know, media, my God, human rights, creativity, democracy, maybe artificial intelligence. Those are big ideas. Syntax isn't among them.
Very cool. I like that answer. So looking into the future, can you give us a little glimpse of the future? What's coming to Snap? New features, new blocks? What's the direction you're taking?
That's a good question. I'm getting it asked a lot. And to be honest, there's things that we want to do, but we don't know whether we can do them. we'll just do something and later say that's what we want to do. No. So there's things that Brian wants to add introspection and self-reflection. I want to add that too. So the capability to have first-class programs to be able to programmatically create scripts and to analyze them. I'm very enthusiastic about adding a special way to program microcontrollers and robots to Snap. It's another project that's kind of in parallel, and we're trying to bring it together. It's called MicroBlocks. It's a way to basically have the same semantic model of Snap and bring it to hardware. So we have, you know, scripts running in parallel. We can program in blocks and we have the same liveness of interaction. So that's kind of my big thing for the next year.
Very cool. So thank you so much for this interview. It was brilliant. Reminds me just that this was the right decision to start this podcast. Thank you so much. And all the best for the future.
Thanks for having me, Sven, and all the best for your podcast. It's really great.
In this episode, we explored the Snap visual programming language together with Jens Mönig, the lead developer of this educational language. If you want to try it out, just visit snap.berkeley.edu, or if it's easier for you, just head over to kidslab.dev and check the link in the show notes. I hope you also liked this episode. If you did, do me a favor and subscribe in your favorite podcast app so you don't miss a future episode. If you have feedback, either use the kidslab.dev website or just tweet with the hashtag kidslabpodcast. In the next episode, we're talking to John Shovik from Switchdog Labs. He has created many Steam projects and currently runs a new Kickstarter campaign. It's called Our Weather, and it's a do-it-yourself, internet-connected weather station.